Hey kids, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast you're going to love. On behalf of myself, Morgan Rector, of one of the most horrific true crime podcasts, Human Monsters, I'd like to ask you this question. Do you like to travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Fun fact, there is a morgue on every cruise ship. After all, people die everywhere. Why wouldn't they die on a cruise ship in the Bahamas? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation, and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband, and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and what-the-fuck stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway, and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hi guys, I have received many requests to cover certain cases for this show. I have found a way to accommodate this without playing favorites. At the first of every month, I will sift through names from my list of Patreon donors in a bowl and draw someone at random. That individual will get to choose a case for that month. The link to my Patreon account, once again, is www.patreon, that's spelled patreon.com/leader1, LEADERONE. Thank you and enjoy the show.
you seem so scared? All I wanted to do was play with you. Please come and play with me. I'm so lonely. You're not afraid of the dark, are you? Don't be afraid. Come with me. I will show you where I play hide and seek. Do you want to play hide and seek? You hide, and I'll find you.
Yes, welcome to Human Monsters. This is a sequel to the episode called Prison Horror Stories. This time around, we have a guest who has actually been in prison, and he can dispel some of the myths and misconceptions that we've been led to believe in if we've never been in prison, because movies and television have a way of depicting it in a way that's not always realistic. Sometimes it exaggerates certain aspects of prison culture. It's Raymond Hazen Jr., and he's also the co-host of another one of my podcasts, the Trailer Park Boys Fan Federation podcast. If you're a fan of the Trailer Park Boys TV show, then you may enjoy that one. So thank you very much, Raymond, for joining me on this episode.
Wow, thanks for having me in, man.
All right, so I'll start off. So what were you arrested for? What was the charge that brought you into prison? I'll go with... I think you stayed in prison more than once,
commercial
right?
Commercial burglary.
Commercial burglary. So was it? Was it shoplifting or?
Yeah. Well, it was a bunch of stuff. I stole a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah.
Store. Yeah.
So how high end were these products? Was it like electronics or something?
It wasn't too high end. It was just a bunch of camping gear and shit like that. You know, I was living at home, and so I just went and sold like a whole bunch of stuff, and it was several hundreds of dollars, and I think it was about close to a grand's worth of stuff, and. Got hemmed up for that, and so they gave me a burglary charge out of Napa for that.
And it seems to me like one of the hardest things about being in prison must be the first 24 hours. I'm particularly talking about like when you go for the first time, just the reality of it sinks in, the gravity of it, where it's like, I'm not leaving this place for a long time, and I'm surrounded by a lot of bad people. So, like, what was the first night like when you were there?
It really, for me, it wasn't really too much. I mean, my dad went to prison when I was, like, 3, and so I had been going as a visitor from a child all the way on. So, like, I was familiar with being incarcerated, not really as in, like, I had been too much. Like, as a child, you're not really locked up, you know. But I started getting arrested myself as an adult, like, right out of the gate, you know, stupid things like, you know, being 17 or 18, you know, drunk in public somewhere or partying or, you know, doing peddly little stupid shit kids do, you know. But by that point, I had done, you know, quite some time in county jail leading up to prison. So I was not unfamiliar with being incarcerated. You know, I got a couple DUIs by that point, you know, driving home from bars and things like that. Eventually they sent me for the burglaries and it was weird. They sent me to San Quentin State Penitentiary, and I remember pulling up, and like, I wasn't as like scared or shocked as I thought I would be. And I remember thinking that was kind of odd. Like, this is already too comfortable in my life. And this is my first trip to prison. Like, I'm already like, yeah, I know kind of what to expect. But I do remember San Quentin is like a castle almost. It's its own, like, its own world. It's a trip. And I think I've stated on the other show that we have that it is the oldest penitentiary in California. I think 1889 or 88, something like that, is when it was built. Next one would be Folsom. I just remember thinking how, like, it was big and massive, and I mean, it was intimidating. I didn't know what to expect, but it's not like I wasn't unprepared for the possibilities. And I remember walking in, it was a trip. It was crazier now, because like, you go in, they give you your bedroll, and they make you dress out. And of course, you know, you got to squat and cough, and some guy wants to look at your butthole. I mean, you guys are having that job. You just in the guy's buttholes all day, every day.
Did they delouse you too? They throw the white powder on you?
No, they don't do that. They don't do that. But see, once again, I mean, not once again, maybe I should state that my point of view is limited into this area of the world that I'm in down here in California. Like, I haven't been to prison in New York or Amsterdam or Russia. So, I mean, everywhere's different, you know. I did do a little time up in Oregon. That was the weed thing that I mentioned to you one time. I got busted with a bunch of weed with some buddies, and we were up in Oregon for about a week. And that's a different place because, to my understanding, they don't really have jail versus prison. They just have the detention center. And so everyone in there, it could be a 30-day charge, it could be a 10-year charge. You're all there together. At least that's the way it was made out to me, like was told to me where I was at Coos Bay, Coke Hill, Oregon. That was a trippy place. But anyway, they give you, they walk in, and I remember they took me to West Block. West Block is where they put me, the infamous West Block of San Quentin. And it's the oldest part of the prison, and it's still the same bars, the same everything from back then when they built it. Like, there's, you know, when you walk inside this big building, it's a building inside of a building. So, like, the cells are its own building, and there's a building built around that. And the cells are back to back, so they face opposite directions. And you got yard side and bay side. Yard side faces the yard, and the bay side faces the bay of the Bay Area. And they tell you, whatever your last name is, and what cell you're in. And there's 5 tiers: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's basically just picture 5 stories. Inside, it's a 5-story building inside of another building. And 100 cells long. So you got there were 1,000 guys in there or something. And anyway, they tell you, and you just start walking up these stairs to go to your cell, man. And just everybody you can imagine is just hollering at you. Everyone wants to know who you are, where you're coming from, and know the first person of your race that sees you. Like, the first cell you walk by, whatever race you are, that person is calling at you, because they're going to let you know who on the tier, whoever route is, the key holder of your guys' what's called car, and that's your race, because yes, in prison, it's still purely racial politics. They gotta make sure your paperwork's good, you don't have any bad charges, like rape and like child things and bad shit. So they just make sure you're good, and then you get to hang around. If you're not good, you're getting removed. But I remember this is the craziest thing. First night I got there, this is the whole point of the story. As I'm walking down the chair, they tell me first time, Hayes in, 378 Bayside, I think is what they said, 378. So that's third tier, 78th freaking cell down. So I'm walking down, and as I'm just walking, right, and like people are hollering and everything, I'm trying to ignore, mind my own business. Cause I remember before I got there, some older dudes I knew who'd been there told me, if you can do these two things, you'll pretty much stay out of trouble in prison. If you can avoid gambling debts and drug debts, getting in debt for things, for the most part, you can stay out of trouble. That's what gets most people caught up, are those two things, gambling debts and drug debts. I wasn't informed of this very message, and I'm glad that I saw the sign, because as I was walking down, I happened to glance over to the left, and on the other side, there's a big gap from the tier that I'm walking on, which is basically like a balcony, there's a big gap, and there's the wall over there, and there's what's called the gunner's tier that they walk on, and there's like 2 or 3 of them that go up. There's 3 that go up the whole wall. And so like each one can watch 2 at a time, of the 5 tiers. And right as I'm walking by this, I look over, here's this big giant sign that says, warning, no attention, no warning shots fired in this unit. And at that very second, here comes a guard walking by, which is a big old rifle in his arms, walking right past that sign. It's saying, no warning shots fired, attention. Yeah. basically meaning, if you fuck off, they're gonna shoot you. And yeah, they would.
Yeah, that's quite a welcome wagon, isn't it? Yeah.
That's good information. Oh, dude, and it was crazy. This is true. Okay, I think we've all seen, the old Tango and Cash with Stallone and Kurt Russell, and it's the scene where they go into prison, and it's like things are getting thrown out of the cells and like stuff's on fire or trash everywhere. Oh, it's just like that. When I walked in, dude, there were mattresses on fire, fucking shit being thrown everywhere. And there's these dudes called, what are they, cheer runners, basically? Well, they swept up, the dudes on the bottom floor swept up a lot because it was all day. And they had those big dust mops. And they would just push it from one end and turn around and back to the other. And turn around back to the other all day, back and forth, because the shit flying out never stopped.
Well, you mean like that thing they call fishing where you lower a string with an object on it and someone picks it up and, yeah.
That is 100% true. You get a... Usually you can use sheet, and you get strips of sheet and tie it together to make your line, and then you make what's called your car, which is usually like a soda bottle or like a juice bottle, something you get your hands on, and get some weight to it, so that way you can have a little weight on the end. And then you basically it's just a back and forth type motion. You use the weight of it to send it where you need it to go, you know, and then other people can grab a hold of it, and you know, if you've got a long enough line, they'll pull it into their house a bit, and fish down farther if you need to go farther, and you keep the farthest end tied to like your racket in your house, and then no matter what, it doesn't go anywhere. But you got to be careful because the guards coming by, they're cutting that shit and ripping that down, man. And who knows, you might have a kite on there, a kite's a note, you know, saying some shit. You might have some store on there, some things that you bought. You might have some weed, who knows what, you know. And if the cops cut that, dude, you're lost. And let's say, you know, dude sending you some tobacco or something and the cops take it. Well, guess what? You purchased that, whether that you dropped the stuff off already or not, you know? Period end of story.
And one other aspect of the interpersonal dynamics of prison is the relationship with your cellmate. And I know that sometimes that can get very tense. Did you have any problems there? Because I know that sometimes, like, you know, if a guy is not very fastidious about cleaning up the toilet or whatever after using it, that can become a huge issue because you are cramped into a very tight space. So did you experience any kind of drama with your cellmate?
Well, I will say that the San Quentin, West Block, Badger, Donner, all those sections, which Badger's the only other one I've been in. But anyway, they are very, very small. They're like 4x8x11, 4 feet by 8 feet tall by about 11 feet long. That is it. When I'm standing there, I can put my hand on my hip, my elbow against one wall, and then put my arm across the top bunk and fingertips to the other wall. And like, so I'm talking fingertips to elbow is how wide the thing is. And then, you know, put my hand up in the air and it's knuckles. I can't even extend my fingertips. Knuckles touch the roof. And it's tiny. And then there's the length of it is the length of the bunk, and then there's a toilet directly on the other side of the bunk. And the toilet and the sink are a combo, like one unit. So yeah, they're very tiny. So yeah, you can easily get cramped. And some guys are big guys. You know, I got lucky, I never had too big of guys. Like, I'm a large guy myself. I'm just about 6'2", and I mean, I'm close to the peak of my weight. I'm right around 260, 270-ish. I haven't stepped on the scale in a while, but I'm right in that vicinity. Luckily, I've been the bigger one of the dudes in my cells normally, so, because like I've got, like I said, we've all got buddies that are real, real big, and it'd be harsh. I've seen some big dudes in there. It'd be harsh to sell, or to share a cell with one of those guys. I had one dude that we had a few little arguments and beefs. I mean, it can get that way, you know, like, so not everyone's been in there, but everyone's grown up and had a buddy or you know, a girlfriend or whatever, come over to spend the night, and they stayed like 2 or 3 days too long. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you just kind of like everything's annoying. That happened a few times, but for the most part, at least in the experience I've had, you know, we've understood that like there really isn't much choice we can do, and all we're gonna do is get in a fight and wind up in the hole and losing time over what, because fucking like you left your spoon out or something, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So inside this cell, you try to resolve your issues as best you can because there's not much you can really do, and because no one's coming to crack those doors really. Like, you know, you're not getting out of, like, the cops don't care really once you're in there. Once you're locked in your cell, man, they don't. They're not coming around unless they're coming to toss your house, you know, which they do a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, coming in. check down, search for things, proto, knives, weapons, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, drugs, kites, kill kites, whatever. You know, just throw all your shit off the tier.
Tell them about Pruno, actually, how that's made and what it is. Yeah.
Pruno, it's just jailhouse liquor. I mean, it's what you're like, toilet Merlot. No, it's not really toilet Merlot. But no, you know, you make like a kicker, what you call your kicker, and that's your yeast. Because everyone knows ethanol alcohol is made from yeast. You know, that's the difference from isopropyl. Ethanol alcohol is what we can consume and gets us intoxicated. It's safe, won't kill you and all that. But anyway, that's made from yeast products fermenting with fruit and other things. And so basically you just make jailhouse wine. It's usually real, you know, low end stuff. Doesn't taste the best in the world, but you know, you get some bread and some other things. You make a little ball with some jellies and stuff for sugar, and you let that start to ferment, and then you drop in a whole bunch of fruit, you know, usually oranges, squeeze up orange juice, apple juice, fruit punch, wherever you get your hands on, and then you can make that. And then guys, you know, if you can get the hot pots, you know, or the stingers, we call them stingers, they're like little, like, you can put it in a cup of hot and make hot water. You get what I'm saying? It's like a little stick. You can put it in there and it gets really hot. You can get those things too. But the hot pots work best. You can get those modified so they get super hot. And people actually can make, you know, they make good Pruno and then they start cooking it off just like you would alcohol. And you can cook that alcohol off and get a distilled, clear, white liquor that you, what you hear when you hear a white lightning. Now that shit will get you some fucked up.
alcohol. How much Pruno would you need to drink to get drunk? Like in terms of drinking shots, how many shots would you need to drink of it?
Oh, dude, a bit, dude. I'm drinking like a gallon.
A gallon? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, figure like maybe beer, maybe wine, alcohol. You're looking at anywhere from like 7 to, you know, like 14-16% maybe. For just Pruno. I mean, you know, you get to the white lightnings, you get somebody making that for you, and then yeah, you got, that's regular alcohol, you know, so you're getting drunk off that for sure, you know, regular, a few drinks, you know, a couple cocktails, a few shots, you know, like regular alcohol. But the Pruno, oh yeah, that's, if you, I mean, you're familiar with Trailer Park Boys, it's like swoosh, you gotta drink a whole bunch of it.
So how does the culture of prison compared to the culture of city jails and county jails, like what did you find was the difference?
Prison's way better.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that to everybody out there, so they just think, oh, I'm just gonna go to prison. Yeah.
No problem.
But, I mean, in prison, you get outside more. There's more freedom. Like most county jails I experienced, you're basically entirely inside. You might have a yard that's usually like up on the roof of the building, but besides that, there's no real outside, like there's a prison, we got the basketball court out on the track, you know, out in the weight pile. There's no weight piles and stuff. County jails are like, you know, inside little facilities, and you go to prison, you can get your own TV at most institutions, you can get your own headphones, you can get store dropped off, you get contact visits, where, and then if you're married, you can get conjugal visits, whereas in county jail, it's almost always behind glass. Like there's tons of this, the amount of things you can get in store, the amount of rights that you have, they all increase. The downside is the amount of time you're doing definitely increases also.
Yeah, right.
But if you had to do like when they came out with that AB 109 rule a few years back, where it was like, you know, now you can do like up to like 10 years in county, or like, I'll tell you right now, I'd rather go do 5 years in prison, 5 years in county any day.
Yeah.
Even though you are at risk more. Dangerous more, there's more, you know, hardened felons there, you know, but if you try to mind your P's and Q's, you can be all right.
And the food is notorious for being really terrible in prison. So how did you find it? I heard it's devoid of flavor, and
it's horrible. They can't really add any seasonings to it because you got old guys with heart problems and things. You can't add salt. Like, people are allergic to things. So, like, there's no seasoning basically in anything. And, you know, we joke about it and say, if it wasn't for our store, you know, commissary, your soups and your chips and all the shit that you buy, if it wasn't for all that, you'd starve. You know, and realistically, you would, because you get the one tray and that's it. Like, if You know, if you get a small little slop of green beans and it really wasn't even a full spoonful, sorry about your luck, buddy. Like, there's no going back in line and going, hey, can I get some more green beans? Like, I didn't get enough. Then, yeah. Sorry, you know? SOL, get out of line. Matter of fact, as soon as you get to chow, which is, you know, the food hall called chow, you walk in, you're in line, you grab your tray, and you sit down in order. There's no just go sit down somewhere. Like, they move you down the lines. Like, as you're walking in, it's like herding cattle. And then you sit at the table with whoever you happen to be standing next to as you go in. You know, the guy in front of you could be who you went into line with, but he ends up at the table over there while you're over here just because that's the way, you know, it went. Then, I'm telling you, as soon as you sit down, you see him coming up. Like, you got maybe 5 minutes. So that's why that old thing, you see guys come home, they eat real fast, they kind of real quick because they got to get the food down. But that is a fact. Like, you got minutes to eat your tray and go. Or, wow. Sorry, time to go.
Did you ever see the TV show Oz?
Yes, all six seasons.
Yeah, me too. I have the DVDs. Yeah. So that's not a realistic portrayal of prison at all, is it?
Well, see, from where I've been, no. No, I mean, some of it, yes. The only thing that I'd say that they depict wrong is all the rape. Like, there's tons of rape in prison, and no, there really isn't much of that I've noticed. I mean, for the most part, most dudes in there are not homosexual. There are some, and depending on what, you know, race or nationality they are, depending on what institution they're at, determines on whether they're even allowed to be around or not, you know? And I mean, maybe on some like level 4 yards, like down here in California, you got, you know, level 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that's your low level to your high levels. And up on those fours, those are your, you know, certified killers and, you know, guys who ate 12 people and, you know, things like that probably. And now some of them, maybe, I've never been to one of those, so I can't say how much rape goes on a 4 yard. To my understanding, now my father's been on several 4 yards, and he's always told me that no, it wasn't really like that. That, you know, maybe back in the 70s and early 80s, it kind of was. That stuff kind of fell off a little bit. I don't know. I think it's also because there are some there that are more open now, that there's people that actually are willing to give it away, but they don't have to rape.
Yeah.
I think is probably what part of it is, you know?
Hey. Do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh. Stories that are great for adults and kids alike. For years now, Sleepy has helped millions of people catch some much-needed Z's, start their next day off fresh, and discover old books that they didn't know they loved. So, whether you have a tough time snoozing, or you just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune into Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes each week. Sweet dreams.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisdorfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right, daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So, why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts, and remember, stay safe.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? true stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath. Oh my God! Take a deep breath. Oh my God! Take a deep breath. Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
So you weren't aware of any of those guys they call punks, the ones who basically become somebody's property and they just pimp them out?
No. That's like I said, that's a bit of a Hollywood thing, or maybe on a higher yard, or in a different state, you know, or a different institution. Like, I know that everywhere I've been, I'm a white guy, so of course I'm clicked up with the white guys, and we don't even let, no disrespect to anyone out there that is, if you're openly running around doing things like that, like, they don't even let you be on the yard, like, they'll remove you, you know? And the whites keep very hard politics when it comes to a lot of things, you know. There was not very very many. Like, usually, like, okay, what is it, CMF? I think it's the medical facility is what it's called. Now a lot of homosexuals and transgenders and things like that go to that institution to keep them protected from people, because a lot of guys in there will you see a dude because in prison. Just because you have boobs, if you've got a penis, you're still a guy, you know what I'm saying? So they put you in with the guys, and those people would get attacked sometimes, a lot of the times, really. And so they started separating them to keep their own places, to keep them protected. And, you get a bunch of guys who, that just don't like gay sex. I personally, I don't mind jerking off, if that's okay to say. Like, I don't need to get it from some other dude to get it. I'm fine. I don't turn myself on enough as it is. I don't need to do it,
Yeah.
Dudes aren't attractive. Have you seen guys' asses? I've seen tons of them in prison showers.
Well, I'm sure.
One of them is sexy.
Yeah. Was there hairy, dude. Was there an anti-masturbation policy? They do not allow that there?
No, they frown upon it. I do know. Okay, so Sam Quentin, this is weird. Sam Quentin was reception for where I was at here in California. I ended up mainlining over at Jamestown, and while I was there, like, Sam Quentin, I think you can order it. You can probably get it, bud. Like, Sam Quentin Times, I think is what it's called. It's its own newspaper.
Oh, wow.
And and it goes to all the institutions, and like, you can buy it. Like, people around the world subscribe to it and stuff. And I should look that up. I'm pretty positive you can. I read an article on how they were still not promoting sexual relations amongst inmates, but there was a box up at the guards' shack, which was just a desk in one of the each of the areas. Each one had a guard shack. It was just a desk. But anyway, you can go up to it, and there's just a box that had condoms in it that you could take condoms out of it if you wanted to. But of course, they didn't promote relations between inmates. I'm like, yes, you are.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's the only promotion of it. Anti-masturbation policy,
like
not that I heard of. But
did the administration not allow it?
You don't want to be caught doing it.
Yeah, no one would under any circumstances. But no. Does the administration have a policy against that? Because, I think I've seen that. I mean, what I've just heard, I don't know, maybe it was in fiction, TV shows, I don't know, where you're just not allowed to do anything sexual. So, are you not allowed to gratify yourself?
You know what? Actually, you're right. I think you're right on that one, because you're right. Sexual acts are disbanded or disbarred. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for here is. Not allowed. So, you're right. I think masturbation might actually fall under that.
Well, you'd think that they would at least like that.
That's ever been like busted for it and written up or anything, but there probably is on the books.
Well, aren't you asking for trouble when you won't even allow a bunch of men to jerk off?
Dude, you take away liquor, you take away fucking dope, weed, you take away some cigarettes, and sex, and you say you can't masturbate.
Yeah, that's a bit much, you know. They got to vent somehow.
No wonder they're stabbing each other in there, right?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of prison rules, it seems to me like it must be tricky sometimes to strike a balance between, on one hand, obeying the prison's rules as laid down by the warden and all the other administration, but the inmates have another set of rules. So say somebody gets killed and maybe they have reason to believe that you witnessed it and they want you to tell them who did it, but you also know snitches get stitches and you'll end up being murdered.
If you can't say nothing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, striking the balancing act between those two sets of rules, that must be tricky sometimes, right?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, short answer, no. Because the short answer is you don't talk to cops, period.
Yeah.
I mean, how you doing? How's your day? How's it going? Anything that doesn't pertain to you personally, you do not say to them at all. You don't say, hey, you see Johnny's new freaking stereo he got, his family sent it? You don't even say shit like that. If it doesn't pertain to you, you don't say nothing to the police. It's about them and the day and yourself, and that's it. And if you just stick to that rule, and you'll be all right. But, I mean, they'll come in. I mean, I remember this one time, it was one of the few fights that I got in there. Me and this dude got a little knuckle up. And I'm not going to lie, he dotted my eye pretty decent. I had a nice little shiner. And so they come over, and freaking, as soon as they see that, you know, they rush me straight off to medical, and they strip me down butt naked to search my entire body for more marks. And then they want to see, you know, all right, who did it? You know, I slipped in the shower, man. I was playing basketball. Like, what do you want me to sell you, dude? Like, you know, it's a handball. And the one cop looks at me and goes, yeah, you see, you play no handball. I said, well, you ain't paying attention, you know? Pay attention more. You might notice some things. And, as soon as I get back, they want to search everybody, check everybody's knuckles, look at everything, which everything was fine. It'd been some days. No big deal. No one got busted. And, instantly, everyone, what'd you say? And, of course, it's absolutely nothing. That's why no one got busted, no one got hemmed up, no one got taken away. But, oh, yeah, they're going to hound you for it. And realistically, at the end of the day, as long as you stick to your guns of, I'm sorry, I can't tell you nothing, or I don't know nothing, you know, whatever it is, you don't have to say I'm sorry, you don't have to be polite about it, you just be like, nah, I don't know what the fuck you're even talking about. Ultimately, they can't hold you on nothing, you know, bust you for nothing, for not telling them, you know? But, I mean, that's up to you. If you want to tell them what happened, you will deal with the repercussions, and yes, you are right, snitches do get stitches. You get caught talking about anyone's business to them, and it will happen. You will get handled. And when you get removals or DPs, which is disciplinaries or whatever you want to call them, because removals and DPs are basically what we call them down here, it's usually two or three or four guys, and you're getting removed physically before, you know, like you're getting hurt before you leave, you know, just actually. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, a removal is you're physically hurt and then you have to go.
Did you ever witness and or have involvement in a riot?
Yes. Two, actually, over in Jamestown, which were just, you know, I was just fighting, trying to keep myself not fucking killed, because it was just a crazy mess. Craziest thing I saw in that, though, is I did see a dude get stabbed with a broom handle in the stomach. That was pretty nuts. Just a bunch of blood everywhere. Saw another guy get hit in the face with a broom handle. Basically just in a situation like that, you just click up with a couple, three or four buddies that you know that you're always... That's the thing I do when you go to prison. Like, you don't have to gang up and become an Aryan brother or a, you know, black, you know, whatever. I don't even know what the heck they're, guerrilla mafia, I think is what they're called. Some of them, I don't even really know, you know, or, you know, the Norteño. Like, you don't have to, if you claim Norteño, man, you got a really rough time in there. They got a hard, hard program, man. They're like military with their stuff, man, and they're vit, you know, but they've kind of lost the battle between the Northerners and Southerners down here in California. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I don't want to speak on things that I don't understand too much from my point of view. But anyway, hell, was I sounding outside tracks there?
So the riot. So how long did it take for that to be subdued, for everything to be like cleaned up and?
Well, it seems like forever, but they really only go on for like, you know, maybe 20 minutes, half hour, 15 minutes. Let's see here. The first one was, I think, in the 20 minute area, and then the second one lasts like damn right 45 minutes. But I'll tell you that the craziest thing that I'd seen, it wasn't in either of those, which if you know, we can wait till we get to that. But there was something else I've seen in prison that was even crazier than any of that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was the most disturbing thing you ever witnessed in prison?
I watched a guy get thrown off. I don't know if it was the fourth or the fifth tier. All I know is I was on the third, and the dude came from above me, and he was thrown off the tier in San Quentin, and went down and basically splatted, dude. I mean, it's like a four-story drop, you know, five-story drop.
So what, his head just exploded on impact?
Yeah, it's just... You know, when he got down there, and I mean, instantly you hear, you know, the alarms go off and fucking shit gets crazy. And you know, believe me, there are more cops in prison than you realize. The 12 you see walking around are the 12 you see walking around. There's like 1,000 hidden in behind doors and underground and all kinds of shit, man. And when shit goes crazy, they come out of the woodworks. You know, people always say, how come the inmates don't overthrow the prison? Because, you know, believe me, there's a lot more cops than you see there at all times. There really, really is, man. I don't know where the hell they all come from, but anyway, you know, they're every tier, there's just dozens of them, and they're just shoving you guys in cells, man. And you know, we were locked down for shit.
And
I mean, in reception, you're locked down already for a while, but like we got cell-fed, I think, for the next like 3 weeks.
Wow, so you were in lockdown, like just wouldn't let you out of the cells, you said?
Yeah. They let us out, I think it was like five cells at a time or something to shower during that time. Showers took like fucking 2 days just to do showers.
Holy shit.
It's crazy.
And, you know, we see murders a lot in like action movies and horror movies and stuff. Well, what is it like to actually witness that? You saw someone actually get killed in front of you, the guy who fell or was dropped. So how did that make you feel just to see that?
Unsettling. I was very ill for a little bit, you know, like it just felt weird, you know, and it felt cold. I found a dead body once before too, like when I was, this is a whole nother story, this is outside of prison, you know, and like it was a dude in his apartment. Like I went with this girl, I was seeing our friend's apartment, and the neighbor came over saying, hey, his neighbor's like hasn't answered the door in a few days and he's concerned. So me and the other neighbor went in there and looked, and lo and behold, dude been on the floor cold, dead for shit, I don't know, at least a couple days probably. I mean, he was cold. And it's not like nice and like warm, like it's, I don't know, it's weird. You know, it's not like the way TV makes it out to be. People aren't smiling, and you know, when blood splatter hits on the TV screen, it's not real. Like, it almost looks real, but it's not real. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. It's very different. Blood's a lot darker in real life.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Very dark. And,
yeah, especially if it's like a huge wound, because it doesn't have time to become red. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oxygen's got to mix with it or whatever. It's got to oxygenate or something to turn all red, I think. But like, yeah, it's really dark, especially when it's in a puddle, like when it's thick and there's not much light shining through it, you know? Yeah.
And you mentioned being in fights. Were you ever ganged up on? Did anyone just attack you, like sucker punch you, or just come at you when you weren't aware of it?
No. I'm a pretty likable guy, you know, I show respect and all that, and I try to mind my business, and you know, if it doesn't pertain to me, it has nothing to do with me type of situation. But I do know there was one time that I had to participate in a DP of somebody else with another guy. You know, I don't want to get in too much what he did, but it's like there's different levels of like infractions. Like if you get in trouble, you know, with the inmate rules, like you do something that gets your dorm, your cell, or another race hemmed up or something. Like, depending on how much trouble it causes, it determines the level of your punishment, you know? And luckily for this guy, it wasn't really that big of a deal. He did get the dorm that we were all over in tossed, which got the other races involved, but luckily no one got busted for anything. So he didn't get in that much trouble, but he had to be shown a lesson not to, like, hey, don't do things that draw attention to us. So this one dude and myself were the two that got nominated, you know, because, like, no one else really wanted. One of the other guys in there was a big, he was a Protestant chaplain's clerk. And I felt, and a couple of us felt like it would be inappropriate to have the Protestant chaplain's clerk out there DPing somebody. Like, that's kind of the wrong message to send, you know, because it's, he, you know, he's a religious cat, you know, so, I mean, don't force that. And, you know, and, so anyway, the two of us had to do it. So basically, you just had to go there, you know, punch him up, put hands on him a little bit for a few minutes, and, you know, and then that's basically it. And pretty much once blood is drawn, so, like, once you, like, split an eyebrow or, you know, bust a lip or something, that's usually when it's done, you know. Hands laid, debts paid is another way that we phrase it. So that I did have to participate in. That was just the one time. But besides that, the only other fights I've ever been in was the, you know, one toss up with the dude where he dotted me in the eye. And that was liquor induced. We were just drinking a bunch of white lighting, got a little drunk and riding out of control. I mean, this guy got a little tussle, so it was no big deal. We were cool about it. Matter of fact, the guy that I got in that fight with is the same guy that I had to DP the other dude with.
Yes, sir. Right.
Oh, wow. Funny how it works like that, right?
Yeah. And one thing I've read about modern prisons is that they've kind of become the new mental institutions, because a lot of mentally ill people do commit crime. So I was wondering if you, like, observed, like, bizarre, strange behavior. Like I mentioned on the first part of this series about prison stories, this one guy shoved a toilet brush up his ass, like the handle, and had the brush part sticking out. Say, look, I'm a rabbit. Was there anything really weird going on to that extent? Or
there was this one dude that I used to keep in solitary at this one place that I used to go by when I'd sweep the hallway. I got a little job as a janitor for a while at one place. And he used to like to finger paint with shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, he did that. There were a lot of dudes who used to like to do weird things with shit. I don't know what it is about the fascination with, you know, some people whose brains go a little loopy and in their own fecal matter. I don't know.
But that seems to happen in a lot of prisons, though. Like, actually, some of those stories involve that. Yeah, people doing things with their bodily substances.
I think it might be because it's the one thing they can't take away from you.
That's right. Yeah, they can't. You got to eat, kind of, and you got to, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of just dawned on me. Yeah.
So what kept you sane in there? Like, surely there must have been times when it was when you had a hard time keeping it together, or is that?
I read a lot, man. Like, you know, I wasn't in a cell. I was riding a horse in the prairie, or blasting off through the galaxy. Or, I mean, if you can read and you can get lost in a story, you can disappear. Fortunately for me, that worked, you know. And then I studied a lot of things. Anything I get my hands on, I studied. And then I took up a little art, like I doodled a little bit. And then when I got to main line, see, during reception and things, it's rough because you're locked down all the time. Once you get to the main line, it's not as rough because, like I said, you're out all the time. I got really active in groups while I was there. I started going it's not really a college, they have a school there that they teach some classes. And so I started doing that, and I started getting involved with some like art and healing classes, and some church services. And I mean, I was barely ever even on the yard or in the dorm. Like, I was always at service or at work, or, I mean, you can keep busy once you get to mainline if you want to. But that's up to you. You know, you have to request it and actually want to.
Yeah, that's one thing I read. This guy said, make constructive use of your time, get a job, take some courses, read books. But the guys who just sit around drinking, doing drugs, gambling, those are the guys who most likely end up in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I always try to tell people that prison can be positive if you leave it a better person than you already went in. Like, if you progress yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, anything along them lines, like, it can be positive. You know, if you go there and learn something, you didn't waste your time. You get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, a waste of time is just sitting around all day arm wrestling. You know, you might have a big muscle, but, you know, with all due respect, that's kind of a waste of time.
Oh, yeah.
But if you try to learn something, if you try to gain a skill, you know, there's trades. You can go, you know, you can go take welding classes, get certified in welding. You can go, you know, depending on where you want it. Like, we got the fire camps. If, as long as you don't got arson on your record, you can go over to do fire camp and go become a CDF fire camp worker through the prison. And I believe you can get certified to do that through them. And boom, you can work as a firefighter when you get out. You know, I believe, don't quote me on it, I haven't done that one, but I believe you can.
And was there one particular thing that you hated about being in prison?
I mean, I guess not having, like, weed all the time. You know, I mean, separation can suck, you know, if you like or have been used to being around certain people or family members or things like that, can get rough and lonely. I don't know, it's weird. Prison can become oddly comfortable too. Like, leaving can become nerve-wracking. Like, I was really nervous to leave. Like, I almost didn't want to leave when my time came around because I had a nice job. Like, I had respect on the yard. Like things were good, you know? And I didn't get no problems thrown my way. I had respect, and I gave respect, and everything was good. And, you know, sometimes coming out to this real world again can be scary for the guys in there, you know? And so that's another thing that people need to tend to remember. Guys getting out, sometimes are, you know, they're nervous, you know, because it's a big, crazy, scary world out here. And when you're out here and you got to make all the decisions for yourself, it could be overwhelming when you've been told what to do all the time. You know?
Did you see the Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, yeah.
And did, so could you relate to that character Brooks to some degree? The old guy who just had been in so long, he just couldn't deal with it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The last time I was there, I was only there, like, it was like 27 months, so it really wasn't even that long. It was a decent amount of time, a little over 2 years. Like, it's enough time. And I still was, like, contemplating, you know, because, like, when my time was coming around, I was joking with a few guys, joking with my worker, because you get, like, you know, you get a worker there that helps you, your counselor, and they, you know, make sure you stay on track and you're not causing trouble, and they help determine where you go and what prison you're at and what kind of jobs you can do and, you know, when you parole, that's who you deal with and all that stuff, you know. Then you get, you know, your parole officer when you go home. But while you're there, it's your counselor, right? You just joke with them, like, you know, I just get a little 30-day write-up. Because, you know, I could get a 30-day write-up. I'll only do, like, another, like, 14, 15 days on it, because I'm going to do, like, halftime anyway. Might even do, like, 12 days. And then maybe by then I'll be ready to go home. And then I started saying that stuff, like, the week before I was leaving. Everyone's like, shut the fuck up, man. You're leaving, dude. Don't do that. Just get out of here, dude.
Yeah,
this is not cool. And no, it's not cool. No, it's not fun. I mean, it can be okay, and anything can be. I mean, Stockholm syndrome, right? Any experience can be enjoyable. You know, I could not enjoyable, but worthwhile. But I mean, yeah, it is crazy there. And every single day shit happens. People fight. People stab. Things kick off every single day. Not all the time does it involve everyone. Sometimes it involves just small groups of people or certain racial groups or certain individuals, you know. But at any moment of any day, it can quickly escalate and involve you. And so that you do have to be prepared of. So I guess the fact that you never know if today is a day that you're going to get into something is probably the one thing I hated the least or the most about prison.
And there's one thing I read... you know, not everyone's a violent criminal, a hardened criminal. So maybe a guy gets involved with, like, fraud or something, but he's, and I heard, like, if you don't stand up for yourself, like, some guy comes around to start picking on you and you back down, that's like a death sentence, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Once you become a victim, like, you'll always be a victim. Like, there's people that's what they do. They prey upon people like that. So they'll come up to some dude and, hey, man, you know, let me get some phone time. Bro, I know you got some phone time. Let me get your phone time. And before you know it, that dude's buying full packages for that guy. You know what I'm saying? Because every quarter, you can get a package.
Yeah.
And, you know, so four times a year, you get a package sent in. And, you know, you can only get one that quarter. Well, some guys want more than that, so they get people like that to have packages sent in, but it's really for the other dude. And basically, they just use them, or they'll have them spend their own money on them, shit like that, and, you know, start taking over everything he's got. Why? Because he's a pushover victim. So, yeah, no, you can't. You know, you might have to fight somebody, yeah, you know.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Morgan Rector, host of the Human Monsters True Crime Podcast. Do you find life boring within the comfort zone? This is the right show for you. It will test your endurance. The offenders profiled are among the most inhumane. These people specialize in the unthinkable. Human Monsters, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and they say also, if you were a generous individual on the outside, don't be generous on the inside, because they'll never stop coming around, right?
Exactly. That was exactly what I was just saying. Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, be polite, but don't be giving all your shit away, because they'll never stop.
And then there was another thing where they said, you know, no one's really your friend in there. Like, this guy, this was a really horrifying story I read about. So he's like 19. I think he got busted for like possession of pot or something. And he's in this with his cellmate, and his cellmate's really friendly at first, and he's giving him like cookies and stuff like that. And then at one point, the guy says to him, you know, you got to pay me back for all these things I've done for you. And so his way of compensating him was to perform sexual favors. But the 19-year-old guy, he wasn't gay. So then at one point, he started saying no. And so his cellmate one day came in with some friends. They broke a broomstick in half, and they raped the young guy with the jagged end. It took 8 surgeries to remove all the splinters. It was just so horrific. Even the warden like came and expressed his condolences. And normally, I don't think you probably talk to the warden that much. But it was a really disturbing story. But I guess that's a lesson, right? Nobody's your friend in there.
No, you know, there was a dude that was there one time that killed his cellie, man. And I don't know. He got a knife, snuck that in there, and so we didn't see it. I didn't even see the aftermath. They had it cleaned up. Like, they found it the next morning. You know what I'm saying? And he was just fourth tier or something, I think, a little ways down. And yeah, he cut that dude up. I guess it was freaking blood everywhere in there. But that one I didn't physically see. So, but that did happen. And so, I mean, so yeah, shit like that does happen.
And then you have to kind of be careful in a whole other way. Like, you have to stand up for yourself. But I've also heard this phenomenon where, like, maybe a guy gets a 2-year sentence, but he ends up killing someone who was attacking him. And then he gets a murder sentence, so now he's doing, you know, 25 years, and he was only supposed to be in there for 2 years.
Oh, yeah, you're not exempt from catching more time while there. So, yeah, you definitely got to be careful.
Did you ever go to the hole, or were you better behaved than that?
Yeah, no, I've been to the hole. I was there for a week during one of the riots that locked a bunch of us down in there. I've been in what we call the dummy box in San Quentin, which was weird. It's just this, it's literally a metal cage that is about as big as you can stand in. you know? If you're 350 plus, you might not, 400 pounds, you might not even fit in this thing, you know? And it's just a cage down on the ground, like right out on the bottom of tiers, and it's just there. And being in those things are shitty, because sometimes people will throw stuff on you.
Oh yeah, you're on display, right?
Oh yeah, you're on display.
Yeah, that's...
And then they strip you down too. They strip you down during that cage.
Wow, and, naked?
And there's not enough room to sit down or nothing. You stand there. I mean, if you're, you know, skinny and small and flexible, you might be able to squat like a catcher and sit down. But I couldn't.
Oh man, that sounds humiliating.
So I just stand there. We ended up standing there for like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 hours or something.
Jesus. So what did you do that led to them putting you
just
in?
Just out running around, you know, what we call wiggling. You know, it's just out. I got out from my cell on a ducket, and you know, like the nurse, doctor, dentist, any reason that someone official wants to see you is called a ducket.
Yeah.
And you know, you're supposed to go there, and then you're supposed to go straight back. Well, a lot of us don't.
Yeah.
And so you always go other places and go see other guys that you know and bullshit with them and run around and then just try to, and basically try to stay out as long as you can before they wrangle you up. And yes, so, I mean, sometimes you'll get a cool cop who'll just be like, all right, go to your cell, lock down or whatever. But usually they're assholes, but I mean, you can't blame them. They're dealing with 1,000 untrained assholes, you know, wild animals running around. So can't really blame them too much, I guess.
So the whole, is that just like in movies and TV where it's dark, you're naked, they got a bucket for you to relieve yourself in? Is it the same way?
San Quentin, yeah, yeah. And let's hear it. Vacaville was just like a little cell. It was like a little salt tip. But you can't have nothing in it. I was over in there. I wasn't there for disciplinary issues in the Vacaville one. I was overflow there. They transferred me somewhere else. And they kept me there overnight. And they had nowhere to keep me, so they kept me in the hole overnight. And that was just like a cell. But there was nothing allowed in it. You know, I had light. But a lot of them are more solitary confinements than holes these days. You got a lot of the holes have been deemed back in the old days as cruel and unusual.
Yeah.
And, you know, because people can go insane in there, because they'd lock people in there for, you know, weeks and weeks and months at a time and stuff. And, without any books, that's the thing. Like, if you ain't got a book, you know, or some pencils so you can draw, right? Like, that's when your brain starts going mad. You got to have something to keep your brain, you know, flowing and thinking and moving. And, I mean, yeah, there are some that are probably still like that.
And getting back into the subject of how being in prison can affect you mentally, I once had some brief contact with a guy who was in for a very long time. I think it was like 30 years or something. And I was going to schedule an interview with him about his experience in prison. He was wrongfully convicted, to make things worse. But his advocate explained to me he has a very hard time taking the initiative with anything, because he was so used to having his life planned for him and like almost zero decisions being made. So to go and initiate something was very hard for him. So can you understand how someone would get to that point?
Oh, for sure. You know, like I said, sometimes making decisions becomes too overwhelming because you don't know how to do it. I had a buddy once. He was some years older than me, so I can't really say I was a buddy. He was just an older dude from like the neighborhood. And he'd been locked up for a while, and he'd come home and, you know, like 6 years or something. And he'd done it more than once at this point. And he was in his probably early 30s, and I must have been about 17 or 18. And I asked him, and I just saw a look on his face one day that he did not look okay. And he's a tough dude, you know. And I'm like, dude, you know, you all right, bro? And he's just like, man, I don't know if I can take this shit anymore. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, all this just freedom life out here, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm about to go do something. I gotta get locked back up, dude. I was like, what?
That's sad, man. Dude, yeah.
Right? Like, it was insane to me. But then having been locked up for a while, and then you get set in a routine where actually when you get into a position of where you have the respect and you give the respect because you've been there for a minute, you know what I'm saying? And you got your routine and your program set up, like, it's the same as change. It's the same as losing your job or breaking up with your girlfriend, or it's change and it's scary and it's unfamiliar and you don't know what to do. And if no one's there telling you how to do it or pointing you in the right direction or give you motivation, like, it's easy to fall back on what you know, what you're comfortable with. And that can even be fucking up. If
yeah.
hurting people or doing crime or drugs or whatever is what's normal to you, even if it's insanity, it's still what you fall back on.
Well, it's not in the best interest of the prison for you to be independent, is it?
No, no. You think not.
No. And did it change you in any kind of permanent way? Like, are you a different person now that you've been in there?
I think so. And here's the main reason why. When I first went, I was still a very angry person. I had a lot of hatred. You know, I hated all kinds of people for things. My dad, you know, mom, you know, my son's mom, you know, various different, this girlfriend, that ex-buddy, you know, I had a lot of just anger inside. And while I was there away from everyone, I had time to actually truly let go. And I don't know if they still don't know. They might all still hate me, but see, I don't care anymore. You know, and I don't mean it like that, like I don't care, like it's just I'm over all the anger. Like, it gave me time to get over things and actually put a few things in perspective and realize that only myself and my life is what I'm controlling and dictating over, and my feelings is it, and whatever I think and feel only affects me. It really does. Like, no one cares if I'm upset at someone else but me. I make my day bad, not yours. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So I was able to realize that life's too short, too small, and the only person whose attitude I'm messing up is myself by having all these frustrations towards people. So it was able to make me, like I said, let go of those feelings. And so now when I deal with certain people that I used to not like, I actually can, you know, hear their point of views. I understand, like my son's mom, like I'm receptive to how she feels about things. And it ain't because of any certain class or any one thing. It's just because I realize that there's no point in being upset over old bullshit, because you never know when today's it. You know, we ain't guaranteed tomorrow. You know what I'm saying?
There are other guys that I've heard say that it changed them in a negative way, in terms of, like, in jail, they just got so paranoid and they didn't trust anybody, and that they couldn't shake it when they got out. It's like they just figure everyone's got an agenda. Everyone could be out to get me. And I think in some cases they couldn't get over it.
Okay. I can see something like that. Okay, so there's something that I'm still self-conscious about. Still, I don't like if we go out to a restaurant or something, I sit with my back to a wall.
Really?
Yeah. I prefer to have my back to a wall at any times in large groups of people. Not even necessarily because I think anyone's going up to do something or up to something. It's just, it's a comfort reason. I know no one's sneaking up behind me if my back's up against the wall. And I directly relate that to prison, and everyone I know does too. They go, yeah, that's totally why you do that. But like, yeah, I gotta, you know, if we go to the club, I like to stand. If we're at the bar, I want to be up against the end of the bar by the wall, you know? Like, stand over here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, at all times. I don't like people being able to walk up right behind me. Unless, you know, of course, you can't avoid it and walk down the street or whatever, you know.
And if you see a guy who looks like he must be like a total roughneck, like he probably is looking for trouble, does that affect you differently now than it would have before you went to prison?
No. I mean, I grew up around all those people. And, I mean, if you see me, buddy, you should know I'm covered in tattoos myself. Mm-hmm. So, no, you know, those are my kind of people. Doesn't matter what color you are. I mean, if you're from the wrong side of the tracks, man, you're my kind of people, and I understand your bullshit. Don't worry, yeah, I get that. I'm from a dysfunctional, fucked up family too.
Is your father out of prison?
Yeah, he's out now. He went back just a while ago, but he got out again.
Did he ever comment on the fact that you ended up going too?
No, him and I don't really have too much of a relationship. We chat once in a blue moon, that's about it. And it's more of a, you know, superficial, how you doing type conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, I don't take it the wrong way, but it's like you're kind of a statistic in that men who went to prison often end up, if they have kids, their kids often end up going to prison too. It's a cycle.
They say if you had a kid with a dad who went to prison has a 70% chance of going to prison, something like that. And I guess it's just because you get comfortable with that type of life I don't know, it's weird. Like, I don't, you know, if your dad's a troublemaker, I guess his friends probably are too. And then so you associate with troublemakers growing up, and then, you know, it takes you either you, I mean, I guess you could be one of the few ones that I'm not going to because I saw what it did, but that's hard. You know, it is hard to break the cycle.
Well, yeah, and especially when you consider in criminal culture, a lot of them have this kind of resigned feeling about it where it's like, yeah, you know, you go away once in a while and you come back and you get back in the routine.
Big deal.
Yeah. It's just like on Trailer Park Boys, they said, oh, yeah, everyone goes to jail. No, not everyone goes to jail. But I guess, you know, in those circles, it just seems normal, I guess.
Well, the funny thing is almost everybody I know has, you know, like all my friends, we've all been in jail, everybody. Well, everybody does. But you start branching out, so you're right, start branching from that circle and start going to their sisters and cousins and aunts and moms and dads and brother-in-laws, and you start realizing, oh no, not everyone does. Just the idiots of each family, like me, do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I know that America has, like, some of the highest incarceration rates in the world. I've had three American girlfriends, two of them, well, my current girlfriend has been in jail. My last American girlfriend, friends of hers have been in jail. It just seems like, and then they were all, you know, working class, poor people. And it does seem to be endemic to that. And that economic milieu, you know?
It's an industrial money crop service down here.
Oh, totally,
now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you know, they use it. It's also a form of modern day slave labor. Like every institution in California, well, most of them, produces things, you know, that are sold. Guess what? They charge the inmate, or they pay the inmates like 7 cents an hour to make it.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
You know, I remember I got the best paying job on the yard when I was there last time. I was somebody's clerk. 52 cents an hour.
52 cents.
Position in the whole institution. Next to the dudes who go into the like the dentist office stuff and touch all the biohazard waste, besides those dudes and the fire camp people, no one had a higher paid position than I had, and it was 52 cents an hour. I mean, the freaking porters, the guys who clean the toilets in your dorms and all the guys, the house mouses, some of us will call them, they're getting, you know, 3 to 8 cents an hour.
Wow.
You know, like. Over at the welding and over at the wood shop, you know, they got some nice furniture being built out there. You know, I don't know what it was being done with, sold. Oh, I don't know. I sure don't know. But, oh, yeah. Chicken farms, all kinds of stuff, man.
And that commissary stuff, that's pretty cheap, right?
Eh, for the most part. I mean, it's kind of a dirty monopoly because there's a company out there called Aramark that got contracts with a lot of institutions to do their commissary. They're, you know, they're a big delivery company, Aramark, but they also are contracted to do the food for a lot of institutions, so they feed you like shit, so you get super hungry, so you buy more commissary.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and it's like off-brand chips and stuff like that. Is it?
No, you get Doritos and things like that. But I'll tell you that your lunch food, like I joke about it, and I know it's kind of a joke, but there's times where I open a can of dog food to feed grandma's dog over here. As I'm pouring those little chunks of wet meat out, I'm looking at it going, man, that looks just like the shit I ate when I was in prison.
Wow, that is sad, man.
No, I doubt it really is.
Yeah.
It looks just like it, man.
Oh, yeah, they buy the cheapest food imaginable, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Gotta be that great W.
Yeah. But, well, I thank you so much for this information, because... You know, we see the way prison is depicted in movies and television, and it's always exaggerated. There's always, it's like the daily anal rapes and one riot a week. It's always blown out of proportion, but it's good to know, it's about the reality of it.
You know, and I also know some older guys who have been on some higher, you know, like level three, like fours. And, you know, I've been on one level three once, but it wasn't that crazy while I was there. So you never know. I might be able to find someone else who's been got a few more experiences than I even have to talk to you if you want. But
well, I guess if you're there long enough, you'll maybe see some more crazy shit for sure. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Thanks, man. I mean, yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. No problem. But yeah, the thing is crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, all right.
I appreciate that.
It's been a pleasure being here tonight, man. Thanks for interviewing me and having me in. And yeah.
Yeah, likewise, man.
All righty, my bud.
All right, take care, man.
All right, you too.
Cheers. Yeah. Bye-bye.